Didn't expect to hear from you again so soon. What's on your mind?
Hello, everybody, but especially you. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 12, Kimberly Does L.A. And now, here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, Tara and Dave. Hello, listeners, and hello, Patreon supporters. For you guys, again with this, episode 63, dropping September 10th. Let's read the Beverly Hills 90210 novel, Fantasies. There are many of these novelizations. We selected this one because I have skimmed through a bunch of them, and in my recollection, this one is quite mean to Brandon.
That's correct. I have read this book, and I can also say I think it's one of the few that's not based on an episode or any storylines from the show. It's like entirely new material.
Yeah, but it's also kind of a clip show. It's
It's
really weird. Anyway, we'll be talking about that. Yes, we're having a book club somehow on Again With This. We super hope that you will join us. Beverly Hills 90210, Fantasies, September 10th. And if you want to come along for that weird ride, it is at patreon.com/againwiththis, where you can find all of those episodes, not just that one.
Let's get into the rudely named Kimberly Does L.A.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, you'll find out just how rude it is when we get there. That's the A plot. Let us begin with our D plot. Haley's strange behavior starts to worry Allison. At the office, Brooke eavesdrops as Allison gives Amanda her apartment keys. She just moved the last of her stuff into the manor. And once Allison has gone, Brooke zooms over to Billy to suggest they get Amanda to let them take Allison's larger apartment. Billy refuses to put Amanda on the spot, which, like, dude, you used to fuck. I think it's fine to ask her this favor for you and your wife. Like, just do it. But of course, Brooke is like, it's not for me, it's for the baby.
Baby. Oh, God.
And then just walks off, trusting that this line worked. And when Allison gets back to the manor that night, Haley is ushering out the Austeros, who tell Allison they just love her house. And Allison pulls Haley aside to be like, who and what and why? And it's because they're going to buy it. And Haley is psyched. He also has papers that she needs to sign, which, like, surely she's not on the deed. I don't know why she would need to be involved with this at all. If anyone, Brooke would, but whatever. It's for story reasons. I get it. And obviously, Allison is alarmed. Clip two.
How can you do this without consulting me?
What do you mean? I'm doing this for you. I know you've never been comfortable here. You deserve to create a home of your own. And the way this deal is going, you're going to be able to start looking for it as soon as tomorrow. Now, I got to get back to the buyers.
No! You can't just walk away from me like I'm some child you don't have time to explain things to. I am your wife, damn it. And I need to know what's going on.
And I just trying to tell you what's going
but
on.
But it's more than starting out with a new house, isn't it? It's the business.
What's with all these questions? Don't you trust my judgment these days?
Of course I do.
Well, then stop bugging me about every move I make. That's my house. And if I want to sell it, burn it down, or paint it pink, it's my choice. Do you understand me? Sign those papers, please.
What are they?
Quitclaim deeds for the house. Don't worry about it.
Why would she have to sign a quitclaim? That's for the owner to do.
Yeah.
She just lives there. Also, but, like, quitclaim, don't worry about it? Those things don't go in the same sentence. Oh, God. business.
I know. Don't worry about it. Okay, I won't. Like, the thing about the way the show treats... Well, not just this show. The way the Starverse treats multinational corporations is so funny to me. Like, just the idea that, like, one guy could make four bad decisions and the entire thing just crumbles. Like, okay, I know about Lehman Brothers and stuff, but it's, like, the same thing with Noah's Dad's company, where it's, like, That's a fucking gas company. Like, how do you fuck that up? Unless, like, there's some kind of gigantic lawsuit. And even then, you're a giant gas company. Just, like, be crooked and weasel out of it like they all fucking do in real life. Like, they just they treat them like they're, a hardware store that just, like, has fallen on hard times. Like, Haley's company had an office in Hong Kong. Like, whatever is going wrong with it, it's more wrong than selling the house and selling the resort is gonna solve.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
Anyway.
It's this business. Exactly. It's the only.
Yeah. Back at the complex, Billy is covering Brooke's eyes as he ushers her into Allison's now empty old place. And Brooke flips out with joy and immediately starts making decorating plans before bouncing off and back again and noticing that Billy is thinking about Allison. She thought it might be weird for him to move in there, but she believed that he was over Allison enough that it wouldn't matter where they lived. And he insists it doesn't. This place is waiting to be filled with their family memories. And some number of nights later, Allison wakes up to hear Haley's side of an apparently tense phone conversation, and then his bullshit explanation for same clip 3.
You remember the tangle that we got into about the house?
Yeah.
Well, I realized how tough I was on you about that, and I want to make up for it, so I'm going to take you on a second honeymoon. Come on, you better get back. And
it's the middle of the night.
Well, we're going to take the yacht. We're going to cruise all night so that we're well on our way by tomorrow.
On our way where?
Well, that's the second part of the surprise, sweetie.
The afterthought of that sweetie is so good.
Sweetie? Yeah. Pack yourself some cab fare and do not get on the boat.
Yeah. Also, like, she has a job, you know, like, Amanda wouldn't give her a day off to do wedding planning. Like, I'm sure she's not going to be okay, or she shouldn't, based on what we know about her with Allison being like, I'm calling from the yacht. I'm not coming in today.
Yeah, no.
Anyway, speaking of Amanda, she is in our C plot. Amanda's Parisi problems grow even more complicated. Amanda's in her office yelling at an unhelpful cop, a.k.a. a cop, about her car having been stolen the previous night when Peter enters. Mm. I don't know why, like, the story of the car, like, it goes nowhere, really. I don't know why this had to be the pretext for what happens later in it, but it's like, did Bobby steal her car and, like, make her have to buy a car? To what end?
What I assumed, but then the way that Amanda or the way that Locklear is playing it, it's not as though she put that together and was like afraid that someone was sending her a message. She's just like vintage Amanda, imperious and annoyed, which is like, all right, that's fine. But then why does it have to be this?
Right. I mean, if she's parking a Porsche on the street somewhere in Gower Gulch or whatever, like, okay, it's kind of surprising that it hasn't been stolen before now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a weird pretext for the storyline to start out on. But anyway, once she's hung up, she and Peter recap their breakup, leave it to the professionals, before Peter says he's there to help with her car. She declines and kicks him out, and he pretends he's going to accept this, saying he'll miss her very much. Over to a hotel suite at the Bellage, presumably. Bobby is staring at the weird Heather Locklear snapshot when Nick comes in, excited to show Bobby the untraceable handguns he has acquired for Bobby. Clip 4.
You know, your father wasn't so much into direct revenge. You could have stayed at home. I'd have killed this bitch myself.
Only you're a lawyer. You never killed a fly, much less a person. Isn't that right, Nick? But guys gotta puff themselves up. I know that. It rubs me the wrong way sometimes. Because I've done it, Nick. I've killed. For my country.
As a pilot?
Last thing I ever wanted to do was to do it for my family. It's the last thing.
Bobby, I meant no disrespect. But Amanda did kill your brother.
Don't worry about it.
I tell you what, why don't you get some rest tomorrow after this thing is over? I'll take you out. I'll show you the town. Deal?
Fun?
Bobby, you are going to do this, right? Because I need to tell your father.
I'll take care of her. I'll take care of Amanda.
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
I know, this vaguely Godfather-y score is so dumb.
One day I will ask you for a favor. Like, why is it the Marlon Brando poster in this hotel room? That's really weird.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, and in terms of, like, I've killed for my country, like, I guess, like, if he's a Navy pilot, he probably, like, maybe he shot at other planes. But, like, it's just I don't know. It's not like you were in the shit, really. Also, it was the Gulf War. Like, no offense.
I mean, the Gulf War was, like, what, 17 days? Yeah. Like, you and Jack Kanner can have a reunion on the web series. This whole thing is, like, they just want him to be not
mobby.
As big of a shithole, like, a shithead as Jack, yeah. A, and B, that it's, like, he's tough, but, he's the Michael Corleone. Like, well, look how that turned out.
Right.
If you think I'm going to stop with these quotes, think again.
Oh, I don't think that at all. No way. The next night, Amanda calls Billy from her new car, which is a convertible, of course, because she thought he might want to go for a ride in it without his wife. What? Anyway, she gets the machine, and then we see that Bobby is tailing Amanda from a discreet distance as she cruises past Peter's house, spying on him reading light. Right next to a window. He's like at the breakfast bar reading at night. Like, no part of this do I believe, but
no.
She then crashes into a motorcycle parked in front of the house, and Peter obviously hears this, and Amanda's forced to get out. And Bobby parks across the street and gets out, cocking his gun, but somehow she doesn't see him at all. And Peter comes out as Bobby's putting the silencer on, so Bobby decides to kill her later, I guess. And she declines to say what she was doing in front of Peter's house and lets him call her a tow truck. And later, they're waiting together on the front steps, Peter noting the coincidence of her having a fender bender right in front of his house. And she has a whole cover story, but he doesn't buy it, perhaps because she's not selling it that hard. Clip 5.
I was out on an errand, and since I got this new car, I wanted to see how it would go on hills. And you live in the Hollywood Hills, so before I knew it, I happened to end up on the street.
Well, how do you explain running over a parked motorcycle in the process?
I saw a dog dart out. I swear. And it was a poodle. A real small poodle. Forget it. No, even I wouldn't believe that one.
I love that so much.
Someone's falling in love with Jack Wagner.
Totally. She's got little hard eyes every scene they're together. Goofing around with him. It's really sweet.
Adorable.
He just says it's good to see her. She feels the same. And now that she's there, he should know he was right. She does run away when anyone gets too close, which, like, that's not really what happened with Jake, but okay. And then the truck is there and they're done for now. And the next night, Amanda and her contrasting check top and mini skirt outfit, you can see in the visual aids, one is straight across, the other diagonal, a classic 90s configuration. Mm-hmm. They're leaving a nice dinner with Peter, who is, by the way, totally just picking his teeth. You can see that in the visual aids, too. Like, weird choice.
Classy.
You didn't really eat. Weird. He wants to resume their discussion about her past and why it's left her so guarded. And when she dodges, he insists, was it Jack who hurt her? Which, like, I think that's been established, but
yeah,
she says freezing. There was someone before him that she loved very much. She was young and stupid enough to trust him with her whole heart, and he threw it away. And then she married Jack, and Peter knows how that turned out. Peter wants to know more, but she says this other guy is ancient history and Peter is the present. And she, again, does so much more genuine grinning and merry laughing in her scenes with him. It's here, too. Very cute. And Peter is mollified for the moment and offers to take her back to his place, where she won't have to talk at all. And she's tempted, but tonight she just wants coffee and a ride home. And she's just gotten home from her date when there's a knock at the door. She assumes it's Peter, but it's Bobby. And the shot of him emerging from the shadows, it's the hilarious moment where you see, like, okay, he looks like a normal person, and then he, like, steps up into the apartment.
Yes,
and it's like, oh,
he's,
okay.
He was, like, three steps down that whole time, and then he just, like, blots out the sun. Yeah, it's like, oh, my God.
As he's passing her, it's like, oh, she's really, like, up to his tits. Like, it's crazy how tall he is.
She would fit in one pant leg. Like,
she would fit just in one shoe.
Formidable. Yeah. And I completely would. Like, this is a Jersey problem, and I'm, you know, I've tried to take care of it, but, like,
he's,
I don't know,
very soap opera guy appealing. Like, and I, yeah, sometimes that's a diss. Not this time. This time it's like, I get it. He's like, yeah, the himbo.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this is their exchange, clip six.
It's been a long time. You look good.
What are you doing here?
I came to see you.
You bastard. You bastard! How dare you come here!
Amanda, stop!
Take your hands off of me!
Stop it!
I'd never see you again.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
I mean, I buy this chemistry also.
Yep.
Despite the fact that he's 14 times her size, and it's like a planet and a moon and its moon making out. Like,
yeah.
Like, I'll give it a chance. I totally bought it. I don't know. Heather Locklear.
She's a good pro. We have to see it through at least long enough to see him, like, pick her up to carry her to bed and look like a tiny rag doll in his arms.
Yeah, just like with one finger, the way you do a towel with a little strap on that's like this fling, like, over his shoulder, like, do, 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 eating a sandwich with the other arm.
Folks, what we're saying is this is a large man. I don't know if we've adequately communicated that.
I think that you think that we're exaggerating. We are not.
No. We started recording today about 2 hours later than we normally would, and I think it may show a little bit in the goofery. But everything we're saying about him is 100% true.
It really is.
On to the B-plot. Shelley's scheme is exposed with violent consequences. There's some B-roll that we've seen before with the Beverly Beat office in it.
There is so much B-roll in this episode.
There is.
Really a lot.
And over that, we get some truly shockingly shitty sub music that I could not stop clipping. So that's clip seven. Let's hear it.
It's so hard just to be with you. It's like walking on wounded knees. And I try to be good and all that, but I know.
You could have stopped
before.
No. I didn't want to stop before the bridge. Yeah, it's so bad. The crazy, how bad it is that it's like the singer is just double tracked. So she's like singing in unison against her own voice. And she's so out of tune, like, with herself.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Weird choice. Wonder what was originally there.
Yeah, I can try and look it up on the next clip. But so then there's the next establishing shot of the Hollywood Hills shack that Shelley is renting that is decidedly not the stone cottage that we saw when Jake moved her in. And by the way, this is also where we see Thomas Calabro directed this episode. Good job, dude.
Mm.
And then Shelley herself in her robe dishing up breakfast for herself and Jake. And he basically ignores her until she solicits a compliment. And after he is half-assedly offered it, she kisses him and tells him that was how he should have thanked her for breakfast. But his attitude is because he's been working up to asking her about the computer, which, like, has he been there all night acting this cold and distractedly fucking her while thinking about the computer? Like, I know we know she's a villain, but if he's been stewing about this since Matt couldn't log him on yesterday and then lost him a food delivery for his business, like, how was their interaction before this point?
What? It's like every time we're like, did they just sit silently in the car and then wait to get home to start fighting as they're coming through the back door where a camera was? Like, guys, come on. He would have yelled at her about this immediately because of the meat delivery. So that was why that was not, you know, shooters. Like, guys, learn how anything works. Seriously. Learn how humans work.
Ugh. So she plays innocent. She swore she told in the password, which is bar tabs. Not great OPSEC, Shelley. But is he asking because he wants to know or because he doesn't trust her? And he says he just wants to be more hands-on, and that is fine with her. And the next night, Jake updates Matt on the computer situation, gravely adding that Shelley is not a thief and Matt is being paranoid. And then Shelley herself appears just then. She's taking the computer to the back room for a while, which, like, she has it with her. It doesn't just live in Jake's office and, like, holds the bag up so we can see the nice big Apple logo, like, copy that. And once she's gone, Matt quietly asks Jake to make sure that Shelly's not up to anything. He offers to log in himself the next time Shelly's out of the bar, but Jake tells him just to do his job. But Matt doesn't. Waits until the bar is too busy for Jake to make a scene, I guess, to say he logged on when Shelly went to the bank. Jake is pissed, but he should be grateful that Matt does not respect him as a manager. Clip 8.
Look, Jake, I know you don't want to hear this, but according to the computer, your corporate checking account balance is below $1,000. Look, it makes no sense. We cleared over $3,000 yesterday. Look, it's not going to hurt you to go down to the bank and double check for yourself.
I'm going to go down to the bank, all right? Just prove that you're wrong. After I do, if you bring this up again, you're fired.
I mean, we'll see. I have an answer about what song was originally there. According to TuneFind, it was Name by the Goo Goo Dolls. No, wait. That's not the Goo Goo Dolls song. It was a boy named Goo.
A boy named Goo?
Or that's the album? It's not clear. This site is hard to read. But anyway, Goo Goo Dolls, something by the Goo Goo Dolls that would have been appropriate.
That would explain why.
When I said Name, I thought it was gone. I don't tell your name, that song. But I don't know. That's even them. Anyway, moving on.
Okay.
The next day, Jake is counting cash when Shelly appears and offers to take it to the bank. But actually, he was thinking he would go, actually, no particular reason. And she looks disappointed, but recovers to tell him to make sure to go to the merchant window, which is a good tip, I remember, from my own time doing business banking in person in the 2000s. Yep. But he's been to the bank before. And once he's gone, Shelly stalks into the office. And Hudson Leck looks like such a dumbass with her lower lip sticking out all the time. But especially right now, while she's committing financial crimes behind a computer, like, pouting.
Yeah.
But anyway, she narrates as she transfers $3,000 from her personal account to conceal how low the balance is temporarily, which, like, it'll still show where the deposit came from. So I guess she's planning to pull the plug on this scam soon, or should be.
Yeah. Like, now?
For example, cut to the bank where Jake, trying to sound casual, asks for his balance, which is $3,893.33. And stupid Jake smiles proudly, but then thinks to ask what the balance was earlier. And the teller says at close the previous night it was $893.33, and that there was a $3,000 transfer in from another account, but she can't say where from. But he seems like he knows. He put it together. It's not Billy, it's Jake. So then we're back to the old Stone Cottage B-roll before we see Shelly return home to find Jake waiting for her. She knows that it must have been some errand he was running if he never made it back to Shooters afterward, and we hear this, clip 9.
Speaking of running, when were you going to tell me about the little trip you were planning? One-way ticket to Virgin Islands.
Did it ever occur to you on your little search there might be a ticket for you somewhere, too? I was going to surprise you with it.
Oh, you surprised me. You surprised me with how good you were at embezzlement.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Just stop lying, all right? It's over. You're going to skip town and take my money with you. Admit it.
You know, it really hurts me that you'd accuse me of something like this, but it makes sense because deep down you think I'm just like Jess, don't you? Or is it just your guilt of killing him that makes you so paranoid?
I checked at the bank, Shelley. He switched money over this morning so I wouldn't see the low balance.
I transfer funds all the time. to earn a higher interest rate. You know, if you don't believe me, I'll just show you on the laptop.
This is gonna prove is that you ripped me off. I think maybe the police would be interested in it.
You move, grabs a knife.
And I kill you. I swear it.
You won't get away with this. You can't.
Oh, yes, I can. I made sure of it.
Okay.
We'll see. I'm not sure.
Maybe in the hands of a better actress, I would buy this Linda Fiorentino routine where it's like, I set this up very carefully, but it's her. So, no.
Yeah. Remains to be seen how good she was at covering her tracks. I believe she could get to the point of like stealing it. I don't believe she could figure out how to pin it on him stealing from himself or something, but anyway.
Yeah, like they had cameras of her, like she going in and out of the safe deposit vaults, like okay.
Yeah. Anyway, she makes it to the door, but when Jake advances on her, she slashes at him a couple of times, but he still manages to get his arms around her and knock the knife out of her hand while she screams. But when he pushes her up against the wall, she changes tone. Clip 10.
Oh, you're so screwed, Jake. You're so screwed.
Thanks. My ass is going to jail.
911, state the danger of your emergency.
Yeah, I need the police. I got a woman here who just tried to kill me.
One moment.
Yeah, just a second.
Yeah, I'm just going to put you on hold a quick sec. Oh, my God.
That was the best part of that clip. This plot line, I'm going to say, which we leave here for now. Finally, our A plot. Kimberly gets slut-shamed, and Jane continues finding new ways to suck. For the first time, we get to watch Kimberly in action on the air, and more to the point, hear her sultry radio voice. Clip 11.
And we're back with tonight's subject, knowing when it's right between you and your mate and when it's all wrong. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Vic from North Hollywood.
3 nights in a row. Well, Vic, you must have one amazing speed dial. So, what happened after we last talked?
I did exactly what you said. I told my girlfriend that I cherished her, that she was the only one for me, but it backfired. It ruined everything.
Oh, now calm down and tell me what she said.
That she wanted to see other men.
Well, I guess she just doesn't appreciate monogamy.
No, she doesn't. It's because she's addicted to the thrill of seduction. Being with somebody new all the time.
Or maybe she just enjoys sex. And Vic will be our last caller because unfortunately our time is up. Once again, this is Kimberly Shaw. I thank you for joining me, and remember, when you want to reach someone, usually all you have to do is touch them.
Okay. That zipper you heard was her unzipping her top to torture her producer in the next booth, because now Kimberly's thing is she's super horny all the time. I don't know.
Yeah, I just hate this whole plot line for her. Like, I'm super happy that Marcia Cross is obviously enjoying herself and getting to show off her banging body, but this is like really retrograde, like worst of the 90s, like vagina dentata anxiety shit coming out of the writer's room, and it's like we're stuck with it for a couple weeks, I think. So yay.
So by the time this producer has run into her booth, she has her boots up on the desk and her top completely unzipped. And he stutters a compliment on the show and then asks her out for a drink. But she's ready to skip that part, running her hands all over him. She guesses he thinks that she's a depraved and lonely woman coming onto him this hard, which he denies. But she says that's half right. She is all alone in the world. Not tonight, he says. And so she puts on a baby voice to ask if he cares about her. And when he immediately says so, she grabs him by the hair and calls him a liar. But it's fine. She'll still fuck him. And at Hart and Mancini, Sarah's taking a sip. We almost had a hint-splosion.
I'm fine.
At Hart and Mancini, Jane bitterly watches Joe and Richard chatting before picking up the phone to call Michael at his office. And, of course, that means she gets Sydney first, and she tries to push through the awkwardness by being a bitch about it. And then flirts hard once she gets Michael on the line, trying to arrange another date and baiting him when he hesitates by suggesting that Sydney has him on a leash. But he knows how to handle Sydney. He'll be at Jane's place the next night. And then Sydney comes in to find out what that was. He claims it was about a piece of his alumni mail that went to Jane's place. Love that detail. Uh-huh. Fucking alumni mail all the time. He looks surprised when Sydney reports that Richard just dumped Jane and then sits in his lap to preview the next night's dinner. He claims he has a surgery that just came up, and when she pouts about it, he says this, clip 12.
Now, Sid, you know as well as I do that sacrificing personal time is part of the profession. Now, as a doctor's significant other, don't you think you better get used to it, honey?
That honey, much more credible than Haley's, sweetie?
Yeah.
Then there's a forehead kiss, of course. Expertly manipulating her to keep her on the bench in case things go bad with Jane. We have no choice but to stand.
We really don't. We've tried. We have no choice. It's true.
But to be fair, it does look like it might not totally work this time. We'll see. At Shooters that night, Kimberly and her leopard print velvet ensemble are doing a lot of eye-fucking the dudes in her vicinity, which you can see in the visual aids. She and Jake have this exchange, clip 13.
Since I moved so close, I thought I'd check it out again. I hope you don't mind.
Why should I?
Well, a lot of people in the apartment house don't exactly welcome my presence, and I thought maybe the same would apply to you.
I make it my business to mind my own business. Who am I to judge?
I think it's okay to judge the woman who tried to make your home explode, actually.
I mean, and then he's like, so what can I get you the next one on the house? And my notes are like, oh, you mean like the house she blew up killing someone? Like that house?
Yeah.
Like, am I taking crazy pills?
I get that they need to integrate Kimberly back into the plot, but this is getting, like, fucking absurd. Like, at least have her save everyone from a different bomber to get her back to neutral and not in the hole.
But that's a really good idea.
Thank you.
So, I fear this will not occur.
No. So when Jake goes to get her another drink on the house, she turns to the polo shirt rando two seats down, pushes the stool out with her foot, and tells him it's free. He can't resist an invitation like that. Jake clocks Kimberly's new friend polo shirt before going to get the phone, and Kimberly resumes flirting, but not for long. This guy has to go. Maybe they'll meet again. And the next day, Kimberly waits in reception at the medical office while Sydney in her weird outfit, you can see in the visual aids, that's all I'll say, handle the phones. And when Kimberly tries to make small talk, Sydney very reasonably ignores her. Kimberly tries to convince Sydney not to act like they don't know each other and claims she only wants what's best for Sydney. She's even happy that Sydney and Michael moved in together. And this cues Sydney to go on for a while about how happy she and Michael are, and then ask Kimberly how her love life is. And Kimberly starts to launch into her recent dating adventures, but Sydney cuts her off. Chit-chat is done. Hey, bitch, you asked. But then Phil from Better Off Ted delivers flowers for Sydney. And while Sydney gloats, Kimberly plucks the card away. It's Michael's apology for missing dinner. She adds that when Michael sends flowers, it means he's cheating. That's Kimberly saying it, not Sydney, of course. And Peter bustles in late for a session with Kimberly, but she says her hospital therapy, what, is going so well he can give her slot to someone with real problems. What hospital therapy? This is the first we've heard of it.
And why? I mean, she has a radio show. Like, this horse is so far out of the barn that it's, like, in the ocean in a boat with Lyle Lovett. Like, guys, just stop. I mean, whatever is going to end this part of the plot line, I guess. But what she got instead is also bonkers. Like, figure out what to do with National Treasure, Marcia Cross, please, because the stuff you're coming up with is not working.
Agree. As an example of someone who could use Peter's help, Kimberly suggests Sydney on her way out. And when Kimberly has left, Peter agrees with Kimberly about Michael's motives in sending flowers. he probably is cheating.
It's pretty funny.
Over to Jane's, where she and Michael are drinking wine before dinner, and he sets her up to lay it on thick. Clip 14.
So you never told me why you wanted me over tonight, Jane.
Well, that's probably because I'm not all that sure myself. But I do know that when I saw you last week, I really enjoyed it. I felt like this flashback thing was happening and all the bad drama faded away.
No, that's funny because I felt exactly the same thing.
Did you?
Yeah.
You know, I want to be honest with you. I've been a little lonely. And they say that when you're lonely, you find comfort in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, I want to ask you something, and it's hard, and I want you to spend the night with me.
You mean...
No, not in the same bed, but out here in the same space.
Oh. Well, Jane, I'm flattered, but I am a little confused by this trip down memory lane. I mean, I thought you had your life and I had my life and...
You know what? If you want to go home to Sydney, then you should, because I don't want to ruin things if you guys are going that strong.
No. I didn't say that. It's just, Oh, what the hey.
Good. Maybe we can even stay up and talk all night like we did when we were first dating.
Yeah. We can talk all night.
Yeah.
More wine?
Sure.
You He's don't so... need this long a con, Jane. Just...
No. Yeah. Also, just fuck him. Like, you want to.
Yeah.
You fucked in Vegas last season. Apparently, it was good for everybody. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I just don't. I mean, I think that she needs to find some reason to time it so that she can, well, we'll see. But,
yeah.
Like, I mean, since you're waiting for that to happen.
Yeah.
Fuck him.
Seriously. But what's so funny about that clip, too, is that you can hear Thomas Calabro playing, like, Michael's calculating of, like, mm-hmm. how the night has changed now that he has to talk her into letting him fuck her, which mm-hmm. he thought was off the table.
Yeah.
Just good. So later, when Allison calls, Jane tells her that Michael's staying over. Allison thought Jane was making Richard jealous, not actually resuming fucking Michael, but Jane insists she's still on plan. And when she is hung up, Michael blearily comes over, suggesting that they sleep in the same room. She puts him off, but she might wake up and need some company, she teases. And he leans in and she kisses him on his cheek, right next to his mouth, leaving him with blue balls. And the next morning, a hungover Michael is awakened by a beep from Sydney. Jane is staking out the courtyard, waiting for Joe and Richard to come down. So even though Michael wants coffee, she says he has to go right now. And sure enough, Richard and Joe get an eyeful of Michael, leaving barefoot in his tank top. Joe had no idea Jane was so self-destructive. But the plan totally works because Richard is like, is she seeing him? And Joe is like, does that bother you? And he pretends it doesn't, but she doesn't buy it. Isn't Joe also bothered seeing Shelley with Jake? Richard wonders, and she denies it, also unconvincingly, and inside, Jane gloats. And at the office later, Jane models a dress she intends to use in some showcase the next night, getting Richard to come awkwardly close as she asks him to pin it for the edits that she wants to make. Like, hey, maybe it'll go easier if she takes off her bra, and then she whips it out. And Richard knows what she's doing, but he goes along with it anyway. And she then starts blawing about the event. It's going to be great. She wishes she could have gotten Michael a ticket. And then she apologizes. She hopes Richard doesn't mind that she and Michael are seeing each other again. But why should he when Richard is with Joe and they're all happy? Clip 15.
Do you love him?
Now, there's a familiar question. I could love Michael. We have history. I know him. He knows me.
Richard, I need to go over, lock in some times for tomorrow's shoot.
Well, sure, come on in. I was just helping Jane with her neckline.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
You know, I better get this to the seamstress. Thanks for your help.
You can call me nuts, but that wasn't a neckline she was pushing into your hands.
There are times when you need someone who can act for these scenes, and this is not what we're getting.
No, we're not.
I mean, Zuniga's fine. Mm-hmm. He's just, I don't know, like, as I've been saying, his very stuffy, like stuffy nose delivery is not unentertaining to me, but yeah, no.
Some number of nights later, Kimberly's back on the air. Apparently, they're not getting a lot of calls. The topic is truth and who decides it. And the next caller suggests that no one's listening because Kimberly gives such shitty advice. Good theory. And I guess it's dead enough for her to entertain it. And when we cut to the caller's place, oh shit, it's Polo Shirt from Shooters. Clip 16.
But first, why don't you tell us who you are and where you're calling from?
It's Vic from North Hollywood, Kimberly.
Uh-oh, Vic, still having girlfriend trouble?
She humiliated me. She said she never loved me. Said she was just using me and all of my friends knew it.
I'm sorry, Vic, but as I recall, my advice to you was to connect with someone else.
What, like she was connecting with every guy in town?
Well, what I meant was...
Let me finish. I think this whole connecting theory of yours is just an excuse for women to screw around.
Vic, don't you think you're being a little extreme in drawing that conclusion?
Deep down, I think all women are whores. Especially you, Kimberly. Including you.
Okay, well, let's hear from someone else, preferably someone less psychotic than our last caller.
Someone like you?
Hello, you're on the air.
I think you're a disgusting, dirty slut!
Vic, do not call back. I will not take another call from you. I'm serious. Let's go to commercial.
Okay, Colin shows...
You have a whore living in Tuon. Do you hear me? Get your own goddamn man. Sorry, what were you saying?
Colin shows have screeners. Like,
yeah.
Where was her call screener?
Did she fuck him to death? He's like, oh, I can't, you know, I can't go in today. I'm exhausted. Like, what? God.
So when they're off the air, she sees one line lit up and takes it, threatening Vic that she will call the cops if he doesn't quit. But he calls again. And the next night, I guess it's the weekend since her shift is from 9 p.m. to 3 a.m., she returns to Shooters, finds Vic shooting pool, and tells him to take her to his place. And as he leads her in, Kimberly asks if he always has to come in via a creepy stairway. The place is kind of a dump, and his explanation is weak, but she's content to sit on the bed and unzip her boot anyway. And he asks if it scared her, but she says she's fearless and proves it by starting to kiss him, and then asks if it's always that quiet. He likes it that way, but she likes it loud. She rips open his shirt and shoves him down on the bed, holding him down and straddling him. And later, she wakes up from all that good dick she just got from her stalker, I guess, and tries to check the time. She sees that she's loosely tied to the bedposts with scarves, and she assumes this is just a prelude to more sexy fun, but clip 17.
Hey, sleepyhead. Or should I say, sleepy slut? I mean, what else would you call someone who sleeps with a man and doesn't even ask his name? Which forces me to introduce myself. My name is Victor. My friends call me Vic from North Hollywood.
Ooh.
And that's where we leave poor Kimberly. Ooh.
Did you get the sense, like, we know it's him?
Yeah.
I mean, you sort of know it's him. Did you get the sense from earlier in the storyline that she also knew it was him?
No.
And this was, some weird cosplay thing? No? Okay.
No, I don't think that she recognized his voice.
I mean, I don't think we're supposed to know that based on how it nets out, but I thought maybe she knew and she just was like, oh, I can handle this. Like, nope.
Right. Alas, it's a big nope. Yeah. Let us close out by naming our most valuable player. Bobby for not killing Amanda in front of Peter's house.
Sure. And also being a four bedroom. Yeah, I would say the buyers of Haley's house because they're going to get a giant mansion dirt cheap.
Yep.
Probably at auction, spoiler.
Least valuable player. All right. Well, leaving aside the ostensible rapist, because duh, I'm going to say Haley.
Yeah.
Not only for all his shadiness, but like, don't wake up your wife in the middle of the night. She's trying to sleep. That's rude. Yeah.
Also, why didn't she marry Shelley? That seems like a pairing that would go much better and solve a number of different problems.
That's really a great point. Great point.
Thank you. Next time and again with this, Peter's jealous of Bobby, Kimberly's kidnapped by Vic, Jane's dating Michael, Richard's making moves, Shelley's going to Gen Pop, and Haley's pulling an L. Ron Hubbard on Allison. You'll probably want to pull an Earl of Gloucester on your eyeballs after you check out our visual aids, and you can find those for this and every other episode of Again With This in international waters, and also at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, which is available in all formats. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. And hey, sleepyheads, head over to our Patreon for tons of extra 90210 and Melrose content, including our recaps of the 90210 OMG podcast. That is all at patreon.com/againwiththis. I am criminally negligent call screener Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Bank Vault Belly Shirt Dress Code Enforcer Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Five Bedroom Suit Jacket David T. Cole. Talk to you next time. Ooh. What?